So good morning, everyone. Here we are. So I wanted to acknowledge before I started that it's been kind of a week. I think all of us that send our kids to school every day have a sadness in our hearts. So I know I do. And I thought about changing my talk, and I wasn't quite up to it. But I'll be speaking again in several months, and I think I'll try to maybe take up how we continue to be present in the world with so much suffering. So it's kind of maybe I'll narrow that down a little bit. But today, I wanted to talk a little bit about doubt. And the reason I wanted to talk about doubt is because doubt's something I've been practicing a lot with for the past few months. And I wanted to talk about doubt as one of the five hindrances. So can anyone name the other four?
Restlessness.
Good. Anyone else?
Anger.
Yeah, that's right. Or ill will. Yeah, desire, greed. And there's one more, my personal favorite. Sloth and torpor. Very good, sloth and torpor. All right, which was happening at my house this morning, I heard. But I'm happy my wife is here anyway. Had a little sloth and torpor among the teenage person at my house. All right. So I want to do three things. I want to start by talking about what I'm calling non-hindrance doubt. So I think there's a way that there's a sense of questioning and experiencing in Buddhism that's a little bit different than some other spiritual traditions. And I want to talk about that a little because that's actually not what I'm talking about and I don't think what's meant by doubt as a hindrance. And then I want to share three different ways that I've been practicing with doubt. And then I'm curious to hear how you practice with doubt. So hopefully we'll get to all three of those things. and I have this helpful glass of water, which I could have used earlier today. So today we're acknowledging Buddha's Parinirvana. And this is the basically commemoration of when the Buddha left the human realm that he had occupied for 80-some years. And near the end of his life, the Buddha addressed the question of faith in Buddhism. This was like part of his last Dharma talk. And after the conversion of Sapana, the Buddha again spoke to Venerable Ananda. It may be, Ananda, that some of you will say, without the Buddha, the sublime teacher, there is no teacher for us. No, Ananda, you should not think in this way. Whatever doctrine and discipline taught and made known by me will be your teacher when I am gone. So right there, the Buddha is asking his disciples not to have faith in him as a teacher, but to really look to the actual practice as our teacher. So that's really interesting to me, that was, you know, he knew his time was limited, and that's what he said. There's another teacher, Nagapriya, who has this lovely little lime green book called Karma and Rebirth, Exploring Karma and Rebirth. And he had an interesting comment on this same point. He said, it's common to approach religious doctrines in the same way we approach everyday truth about experience. We think they're either true or not true. If we accept the doctrines, we tend to cling to them in what may be an absolute way. But then he goes on to say the Buddha also compared his teachings to a raft, the teachings of vehicle. And he says, the Buddha is reported to have said that one should test his words like a goldsmith tests gold in a fire. This implies it's the duty of a rigorously practicing Buddhist to test the Buddhist teachings and see whether or not they hold together. And that's basically what he does in the rest of the book. So these are kind of a strong injunction to us to rigorous, I love that word rigorous, like to rigorously engage with the practice and see for ourselves how it is. Sharon Salzberg says, it's a common assumption that faith deepens as we are taught more about what to believe. In Buddhism, on the contrary, faith grows only as we question what we're told, as we try teachings out by putting them into practice to see if they really make a difference in our own lives. The Buddha himself said, don't believe anything just because I said it. She's paraphrasing here, of course. Don't believe anything just because an elder or someone you respect has said it. Put it into practice. See for yourself if it is true. So I don't see a hindrance in that kind of questioning because we're actually even more deeply engaged with practice. So I wanted to put that out there, but that's really not what I'm going to talk about. The rest of the time I'm going to talk about the hindrance part of doubt. But I did want to share that because I think it's very important and I don't want to be misunderstood that I'm saying we should just, because we hear someone say it, just say, okay, it's all true. That's not what we're saying. So there is a kind of doubt that I have experienced as a deep hindrance to practice. And a doubt that's actually a barrier to this kind of rigorous connection with practice or rigorous investigation. And I feel this doubt as it's like a little, it kind of sucks off my happiness and joy in practice. This little, like a balloon with a little leak in it, kind of seeping out. And I noticed it around the upcoming practice intensive that Sosan just mentioned. So last year I did the practice intensive. It was really actually a very deep experience. I feel it really benefited myself and hopefully other beings. It was a great group. We all hung in there for 2 weeks. And this year I hear this doubt saying, well, that was last year. You know, this year will be different. Maybe it won't be as good. Maybe no one else will come. Maybe I can't really do it this year. Maybe I won't be able to get up every morning. Maybe blah, 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 like that. Like this, just on and on. Just really doubting. Can I do it? Is it going to be any good? Is it going to be worth doing? You know, that kind of naggy little air leaking out of the balloon kind of doubt. Maybe it'll inconvenience my family too much. I can really go there. So lots of doubt. So I wanted to share. So when that comes up, what do I do? Because if I just let that continue to fill my consciousness, then I won't come to practice period. I will call up Sosan and say, actually, I can't be the Eno for practice period. What was I thinking? I'm too busy. And then I'll have a little more sleep in my life for 2 weeks, but I'll be a little disappointed that I didn't show up. So I want to share some things that I've tried. And if you're sitting there thinking, well, I don't really experience doubt in my practice. I sort of sail forth, you know, with great confidence at all moments. I say, good for you. But I bet of that list, there's another kind of hindrance that really is difficult. And so when I say doubt, you can say sloth and torpor or whatever it is, because I really think some of the ways I'm suggesting of practicing would work for all of them. And of course, we all experience all of them, but doubt is up for me, so I picked that one out. All right. So the first way that I've practiced with doubt is by, I call it a borrowing. So borrowing confidence from my Dharma friends and teachers, from my community. So when I feel unstable or shaky, or like I can't do this, I find it really, really helpful to notice other people that do seem to be doing this. So of course, like my practice period example, if I come at 6 a.m., there will be other people here. And I know that. And so I can take a little bit of refuge in their steadiness, even if I'm feeling a little shaky. And we all can do that with each other. And in fact, I'll be here for the practice intensive. So you can take a little, you know, I promise you I will be here. So so that's really important and really, really, really helpful. And that's why we all come together on Sundays. And that's why we sit a meditation retreat session together. And that's why we do practice intensive together. And that's why we do practice period together. Because we can't all do it. If we're just, we're never really by ourselves. We're never really separate. But we need to remind ourselves of that truth. And one way we do that is being in this room together. So I have found that very, very helpful. And then also, the forms themselves can be really helpful when I'm experiencing a lot of doubt. Because there's a container, you know, you sit zazen for a certain amount of time and then the bell rings. Okay, I can do that. Here I am. And then you bow. And so that's what's happening. And so that really helps me keep rigorously engaging with practice. So that's one strategy. If you're really feeling some hindrance really coming up, we can borrow confidence from each other. And fortunately, we're not all experiencing intense doubt at the same time. So maybe I'm sitting next to someone that's struggling with restlessness, but I'm feeling really steady, just doubtful. That's great. You know, we can help each other. Maybe that person can become less restless and I can become less doubtful. The second way that I've practiced with doubt lately and over time, I call a just do it. I don't know what else to call it, so I call it just do it. So one of the first times I remember a deep doubt arising, I was at Green Gulch Zen Center in California. So who here has been to Green Gulch? Okay, so Green Gulch, I think of it as the Pure Land. Because, of course, I don't really have to work there and live there. I get to just show up, right? But it's so beautiful. And when you sit in the zendo, you can hear, if you're really quiet, which it is really quiet, of course, you can hear the ocean a little bit. You can hear the owls calling. And this was the first time I'd gone out there, and I put a lot of effort into it. It's expensive. You know, I had to fly there. I had to get myself there. It was the first time I'd sat for a whole week, so I was, you know, really like, okay. And so we're deep in session, everything's going on, and then all of a sudden I'm sitting there, and this huge doubt came up, like, what am I doing? You know, why am I sitting in this old barn on the coast of California, and all these people are chanting, and robes, and incense, and it's very, their practice there is very beautiful, but anyway, elaborate, kind of elaborate. And I didn't know what to do. I'd never felt that immense doubt, just, you know. And I didn't know anyone to talk. I couldn't do number one because I didn't know anybody. So I felt sort of alone. And I didn't have Dokusan scheduled for days. You know, it was a huge session, so you only, you know, it came up maybe once the whole time. I just didn't know what to do. And then it was work practice because they do a work in the morning. They do cleaning. And so I went and cleaned the shower. While I was cleaning the shower, I was just cleaning the shower. And the doubt was like, well, there really isn't any doubt or not doubt to have about this. I'm just cleaning the shower. And my doubt just kind of went, oh. So this is my just do it recommendation. And I think when you're a parent, it's also a lot like this, you know? I can have a lot of doubts or questions, you know, about how things are going, but I have to make lunch every morning. I have to drive my daughter to her violin lesson. I have to make sure she remembers her permission slip. She has to have clean clothes. So sometimes I think we can just not get so wound up in whatever our story is going on. Oh, I have all this doubt. you know, I'm feeling really restless. I'm really wishing I had some ice cream. You know, whatever it is happening during practice. I've never had that happen. I was just pulling that up as a random example. Sometimes we can just clean the shower. And the great thing about Zen practice, even if you just come in the morning, there's a little bit of work. Sometimes there's a lot of work. At a, like an ango or a practice period, a lot of it is work, like every day, a few hours. And that's on purpose. I mean, we need to get stuff done here, so that's nice. But we could hire a cleaner, maybe. It's not about that. It's about sometimes it's good to just take care of whatever it is coming up. So you can try that in your own life. You can try that when you practice here. I find it really helpful because I really get caught in like a whole whirl about whatever's going on. So the third strategy or the third way I've been practicing with doubt, and this is sort of the traditional recommendation, is through awareness and investigation. And I just want to say we're not always up for this, which is why I wanted to start with the other two things that I found helpful. But as we continue to practice, we can just simply notice doubt arising or even a question, oh, what's this? What's this? I hear this little hissing sound. The air is going out of my balloon, sort of. Or like with practice period or practice intensive, I signed up. I told Sosan, yeah, I'll be the Eno, whatever. But then I noticed this little doubt, right? So we can just notice it. We can shine the light of mindfulness on it. You know? You can just watch it. We don't really have to do anything about it. We can just notice it. So that's a good thing to do. And then see what happens. So sometimes when I just notice doubt, it gets worse. Sometimes it gets less. Sometimes, you probably know what I'm going to say, it stays the same. It's usually one of those three things. That's kind of the choices. So I just notice it. Oh, doubt, doubt. Or you can notice, oh, sloth and torpor. That's a harder one to notice. Restless. And I really mean that. You're waiting for me to say the next thing. There is no next thing. That is it. Because I can guarantee, if your experience is like my experience, something else will eventually happen. It's probably one of the other hindrances. But something, or not, or great joy, or I don't know, something. You tell me when you notice, something will happen. So another thing then, if you feel like you're doing a great job noticing, I notice, okay, I'm noticing, then sometimes I can invite myself to sort of go another step and become actually more intimate with what I'm noticing without getting all caught up in it. So it's a little tricky, but a few weeks ago, Sosan preached on this, or gave a talk, sorry, my background showing. Different, that's a different tradition, but anyway, gave a talk on the Sutra on the Full Awareness of Breathing. It's a very, one of the Buddha's first teachings, and Thich Nhat Hanh says a really interesting thing about this kind of awareness. So he says, in Buddhist meditation, looking deeply is based on non-duality. Therefore, and he uses the example of irritation, but you could say doubt. Therefore, we do not view doubt as an enemy coming to invade us. We see that we are doubt in the present moment. Okay, so that's really radical. So it's not like, oh, this doubt is coming up, and it's this thing that's like ruining my life. It's like, no, we see, we are doubt. In this moment, I am doubt. So that's hard because doubt's really unpleasant. I don't like it. It's uncomfortable, and it takes a certain amount of courage to become that intimate with something like that. I heard a talk by Tara Brach this week. She has a great podcast that someone else in the Sangha told me about. So I have something wholesome to listen to on my way to work. And she said, the boundary of what we include forms the limit of our freedom. Isn't that beautiful? The boundary of what we can include forms the limit of our freedom. So we're only as free as what we can include. So if I'm excluding doubt, if I'm saying, then my freedom kind of stops. It's hindered. It's hindered. It's not complete. So the most recent time I kind of went into deep doubt like this was at Rohatsu session, which is, for people that don't know, every December we celebrate the Buddha's enlightenment. So today we're celebrating when the Buddha left his human form. But in December we celebrate when the Buddha became the Buddha. And we sit for a week if we can, or less if we can't, that's fine too. But I was really fortunate to be able to sit for a week. And I was so happy and excited. This is going to sound like Green Gulch again. But I haven't been able to do that for a lot of years. So I was really determined, like, I'm really going to sit. I'm going to sit for a week. I'm going to do it. And then I had this horrible doubt just start up. Why am I here? I can't do it. You know, Sōsan's giving these really expansive teachings on Dogen, and I can't get it, and I can't do it. Just doubt, doubt, doubt every hour. And you sit a lot. So there's kind of no escape, except the cleaning part. But then you're back. And we kind of cut that down a little bit, too. It's just a lot of sitting. So, and I felt like I was just winding, like, deeper and deeper down into the heart of my doubt. I really, really, really tried to just stay with it, just become intimate with it like that. And eventually I realized that it wasn't actually the practice I was doubting. It was me, that I really felt like this business of liberation in Buddhism is really for everyone and everything except me. I was pretty sure, you know? It was very, very painful. I mean, I'm kind of laughing because it is a little bit funny, you know, to say it because you realize it's not true. But it felt very true, and I'm sure there's people here today that feel just like that. Well, this isn't really for me. I can kind of maybe take the edge off. But being completely liberated, being completely free in my body and mind, well, no. And so I really touched that limit of my freedom that Tara Brach talks about. That boundary, and it was drawn really small. So I realized I had, you know, I could either keep sitting there like that for the whole dang week, which was really unpleasant, or I could embrace completely my whole being, my whole body and mind, all of my doubt. And then I remembered something that happened to the Buddha right before he woke up. And I wanted to read in Sharon Salzberg's book, Faith. She talks about this, and I think I had remembered reading this in this book. So this is the Buddha's experience of doubt. So the pivotal point of the Buddha's story is his enlightenment. After years of trying various methods, he sat down under a tree one night, determined not to move until he was free of all confusion, all ignorance, and all limitation. While he sat deep in meditation, he was attacked by the legendary figure Mara, killer of virtue, killer of life, with enticing and lustful visions, with ferocious rain and hailstorms, with vile images. Mara attempted to dissuade him from his course, but through it all, Siddhartha sat tranquilly. Tranquilly. It is significant that Mara's ultimate attack was on the Bodhisattva, so the Buddha at that point was a Bodhisattva, he had this great vow, his faith in his own potential. In essence, Mara said, "Who do you think you are to be sitting there with that immense aspiration? What makes you think you can actually be enlightened?" In response to that challenge, the Bodhisattva reached his hand down and touched the earth, asking it to bear witness to all the lifetimes in which he had practiced generosity and morality, loving kindness and wisdom. He asked the earth to bear witness to his right to be sitting there, his right to aspire to full understanding and infinite compassion. As the legend goes, when he touched the ground, the earth shook, testifying to his right to be free. With that, Mara was vanquished and fled. So I remember that story. And that gave me a lot of confidence, like, okay, actually, if doubt's coming up, maybe that's actually great. You know, that's just fine. And, you know, after a few days of session, doubt and non-doubt just kind of became the same thing. It really, in that moment, that hindrance transformed itself. Just like the Buddha, we can touch and say, here we are. You know, this is our birthright to wake up. It's for us. It's not for somebody else. It's for all of us, every being, and that's us too. So doubt can be, I think, I'm finding a great practice to know our doubt and become intimate with our doubt. So I would be very interested to hear any other experiences that you've had with doubt or anything you'd like to share? And I'd like us to just before, you know, the hands shoot up, if we could take just a moment to breathe together, and then maybe someone has something they'd like to share. Okay. So I'm just relieved my talk part is done. But does anyone have an experience with doubt or a question about doubt or something about doubt they'd like to share? Yeah.
Kind of like the same thing, but sometimes when I feel really resistant to practice, that's when I really need to practice, when I have the biggest doubts. As soon as I come here or I sit, then it's like a motivator.
So the doubt itself is like a motivator?
Yeah, it's like something saying, okay, you need to get back into practice.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's great. So using the hindrance as a teacher or a motivator. So that's maybe number four way to deal with hindrances. That's great. Yeah.
Before a great endeavor, there's a sense of absolute panic and why did I get myself into this? Is that the same as a doubt?
Yeah, I think. Do people think? I think that's very, yeah.
And it usually works out that the only way through it is to just go do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I notice your awareness that this is just part of doing a big thing is having that happen. So I think that can be helpful too, to just know, well, that's part of the deal. Like for me in these stories, I think maybe I should remember that if I'm going to do a big practice thing, I'm probably going to have a big doubt come up. Well, okay, here it is again. Yeah, that's great. Thank you. Yeah.
So right now I'm starting a new job, and of course there's a lot of doubt in learning a new function, finding a new livelihood, but I find in focusing on the doubt, you kind of shut yourself off to learning, but when you're focusing on the things that you can absorb and learn, it takes care of the doubt for you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so that's, I think, a cousin to just do it. You know, just focusing on the whole picture and what you're doing and going forward and maybe not in that situation getting caught in doubt. Yeah, I think that can work. And then I think it's good to know, though, oh, doubt. I do have doubt, you know. But it sounds like you can feel that, too. Yeah.
for me, doubt becomes very self-centered. Like, if I believe I can't do something, then it's I who can't do something. But if I just become intimate with it, with that doubt, like as you were saying, and just trust that I'm going to do my best with whatever situation is arising, that it may not work out like the way I planned it out in my head, but something happens that, you know, that I can learn from.
Great, yeah. Thank you. Did everyone mostly hear that? I hope. Okay. Anyone else? So we're Zen Buddhists. We always have something we can do with the time if you don't have more questions. Yes. That's right. You said it, not me, but I really felt that. I really felt that at Sishin. Sometimes I think when these hindrances arise, that's actually, like, that's fine, you know, because we're really close to something important. And our little ego that's very attached to being separate is screaming, no! Like the Wicked Witch of the West, no, I'm melting, don't. You know? And that's if we're just come close. It's okay. It's okay. Yeah. Thank you. Maybe one more. So if you have something, this is it. Yes, Ken.
I remember hearing Norman Fisher say, doubt everything, doubt yourself, doubt so completely that you are just doubt.
That's it.
What that to me more and more is a simple openness, an openness of heart toward everything. None of us have the certainties we would like to have about this life. All we can do is be open and sit like a question mark and let go of the certainties, and that's what doubt suggests to me, just becoming doubt.
Great. So thank you very much. For your kind attention. We're going to have here in a few minutes a very brief ceremony to honor Parinirvana Day. You have some little cards with a chant that will do. So after the closing chant for this portion of the morning, that will be happening.